Well, hello everyone, it's lovely to see you all. I just need to excuse myself a little bit in advance. I'm at the sort of tail end of a cold and my voice hopefully will hold out. That sounds quite good, doesn't it? Quite strong. But if I begin to fade a little bit, can someone at the back either go like this or like this so that I know that you can hear me? So I hope that's all right. Yeah, we all probably carry around a diary of some sort, whether it's an electronic diary, which is, I think, what most people do these days, or it might be a sort of old-fashioned paper diary that I still carry around, or it might be a diary we carry around in our head. And another word for diary is an agenda. In fact, it's the French word for diary is agenda. I don't want to get the French in there. For totally, you know, random reason, but and an agenda really sets out what we decide we have to do over the days, weeks, months ahead of us, it sets out our commitments, the main happenings in our lives for the near future. And for most of us, that agenda is very much a me agenda. And it basically reflects how we perceive the world, with me very much at the centre. And it's about my time being determined by what my needs are. What are my needs? Well, Buddhism says that my needs are my reactions, if you like, to certain factors and conditions around me. Some of which I've inherited, some of which I've created for myself. So, for example, for me, I was born in the 50s, in England, in London, in Fulham. My parents brought me up in a certain way. I grew up in the 60s in London, which was a very formative time for me. And all those things have had an influence on me. And also, I've created some of those conditions for myself. So, for example, decisions I've made in my life, a lot very unskillful decisions, some a little bit more skillful, some very consciously, some less consciously. And all these factors have come together and and they've become habits of mine, and so that they've resulted in my habits, my personality, if you like. It's how I perceive and experience the world. And these coalesce into some sort, into an identity, and at various times in my life, I've identified myself as a beatnik, as a hippie, as a revolutionary socialist, as a democratic socialist, as an atheist, as a humanist, as a school teacher, as a father, and the list goes on. And along with these identities which are formed, there are views which are incorporated into those identities. And for me, some of those views were such as no change could come about in the world except by political change. It was a matter of changing all the injustices one might see in the world had to come from above. So, you know, I felt like I need to put my energy into that, changing the world from above, as it were, from the top. Another view I had was a sort of cynicism about anything that was sort of mysterious or religious or magic. Anything to do with devotion and ritual. And clearly, you know, that came from my materialist Western upbringing. Another view I had was about the fact that I worked hard. You know, I worked hard in my job, and therefore I was absolutely entitled to have free time to myself and do what the hell I wanted to do with my time, because that was my time, and, you know, I deserved it. And these habits, these habitual tendencies that I had, which we all have, Habits are notoriously hard to break, aren't they? And of course, Dharmanatha mentioned a little bit about the institutions of society which play on that. They play on the fact that we're reluctant to free ourselves from our habitual ways of acting and thinking. So we have institutionalised craving, or the institutionalisation of craving on which capitalist society is built. We have the institutionalised ill will, which is what governments encourage us. They encourage us to identify with a nation, to be nationalistic. And we have, as Dharmanatha mentioned, we have institutionalised delusion in propaganda and advertising in all its many forms. And this happens for its own ends. And we can feel, and I certainly felt very much at the force, at the mercy of forces which were out of my control. And it was very easy, therefore, to retreat into the safety of my views, my possession, and my group. And for me, because of my susceptibility, as it were, to certain intoxicants, various natures, certain intoxicants and pleasures which cloud the mind. That's a phrase we use in Buddhism, the fifth precept, intoxicants that cloud the mind. I spent more and more of my time really unaware of what was really good for me. And my energies were dissipated all over the place. Trying to find pleasure for myself in my time, the time I had. And bit by bit, I blindly fell into a huge psychological hole. And I wasn't sure I could get out of it. But sometimes you need to hit rock bottom to make you realise that something has to change. And I eventually, it took a long time, realised that spending time just pleasing myself on my own pleasure and being subject to the worldly winds that blow you here and there all over the shop was firstly not sustainable. I couldn't sustain that sort of life. And secondly, it was unfulfilling. It was unsatisfactory. And this was when, on cue, also almost by magic, that the Dharma found me, I'll put it that way. What it was a book that was on my shelf, had been on my shelf for ages, and I just pulled it down and opened it. And something started to change right then. And I started going along to the Buddhist Centre. This was in the London Buddhist Centre where I was living at the time. And bit by bit, I began to realise, because of the condition by going along regularly to the centre, that the less self-absorbed I became and the more I was able to bring together all these sort of disparate energies which were all over the shop and able to bring together, to start to bring them together in one direction. And therefore, the easier it became to deal with whatever problems, troubles were coming my way. I didn't have the language then of going forth to explain what was happening, but what I felt was a leaning away from one type of life, perhaps one type of consciousness we can say, and a leaning towards another type of consciousness. And, you know, to some extent this involved a renunciation of things that had given me pleasure before. And it also involved a loosening of the ties, but some ties that had been unconsciously it had been sort of tying me and binding me. And ultimately, really, this move was taking a step. And it was a huge step, and it was a decisive step. And I can say it was a step of commitment. It was a commitment to a new way of being, not relying solely on my own self-satisfaction and my hitherto conditioning. And this commitment was fired, if you like, was motivated, was inspired by a sort of confidence, by a faith, a trust that the path I was starting to tread would further liberate me, as it had already started to do. And probably the key moment at this time was taking responsibility for my own life. And I remember one day realising, no one else is going to do this for me. I've got to do this myself. I'm going to change. It's down to me. It was only me that could bring it about. And I needed to think for myself that if I wanted to be a happier, a better, a more fulfilled person, it was only me that could bring it about. And this was also a victory over complacency in some sort of way. It was a victory over complacency because I thought, you know, I was in my 60s, I thought I'd been around long enough, and I thought I had all the answers. I thought I knew it all, you know. I knew what was good for me. I didn't, of course. And that involved an opening up, really realising I didn't have all the answers. And there's a paradox here, because it was also a realisation that change comes from within. It doesn't come from the external things that I would be reaching out to give me pleasure. It comes from inside. But the paradox is that external conditions, external sources, can foster, can encourage that change, can encourage that sense of positivity that I was beginning to develop. And as I started to become freer of my old ways of behaving, and freer of my old conditioning, a sense of purpose began to develop in my life. And I'd never had that. You know, I was in my 60s. I'd never had a sense of purpose in my life before. And Sangha Rakshita, our teacher, has a quote from the German philosopher Nietzsche. And he says that if we are to be truly ourselves, we must live for something other than ourselves. And that really struck me. And I realised that seeing the spiritual path as merely one of self-development, of making me a better person, of improving myself, although important, was somehow missing the point. And to develop, yes, but to develop in the company of others, helping and supporting one another. So how did this play out for me? Well, I started going to the centre, and so already there were conditions around me which were changing. My life was changing in that respect. I feel very fortunate because I'm retired from regular work and I'm able to volunteer regularly at the centre. And for the past 7 years, I've been volunteering at the centre on reception a couple of days a week. And it's been a great opportunity for me because it's been giving me an opportunity to be, to act and be part of a community. Just as people are coming out, people in our Sangha, outsiders as well. But it's just been a wonderful opportunity to be there and to feel part of something which is greater than myself. And I discovered bit by bit that I was actually happier, much happier, when generosity and expansiveness dominated my life. And every time I came into the centre, and this is still the same, you know, every time I come into the centre, it's like a blood transfusion. You know, I feel like, whoa, here we go. You know, it's just something that really sets me alight. That's not a good metaphor with blood transfusion, but I think you know what I mean. So I could be part of something which was actually contributing to a greater good. And I come back again and again to a phrase from, there's a Buddhist text from about 1500 years ago called the Bodhicaryavatara by someone called Shantideva. And there's a sentence there which I keep on coming back to. And it says, all those who suffer in the world do so because of their desire for their own happiness. All those happy in the world are so because of their desire for the happiness of others. All those who suffer in the world do so because of their desire for their own happiness. All those happy in the world are so because of their desire for the happiness of others. Well, that's a massive ask, isn't it? That's immense. That's an immense ask. It's what we call the Bodhisattva ideal. And I think Maitridharka might be talking, possibly, something about that. He's nodding, so that's good. About that tomorrow. You are now. I'll set you off. So it is a massive ask, you know, to think in those terms. But what a beautiful guiding principle for our lives. And of course, you know, I don't want to sort of talk myself up too much here. This is very, very much a work in progress. I don't want to sort of give the impression that I give myself so selflessly all the time, all my time goes to helping in the centre. But there's a shift. There's definitely been a shift. I still cling and cherish to an identity which includes this sense of a fixed sense of self, with its illusory comfort and protection, which is what Dhammanata talked about. We build something around us because we feel it gives us comfort and protection. It's an illusion, it doesn't. But I don't want to give an impression that somehow by participating in the Sangha, all we're doing is exchanging one group consciousness for another group consciousness. Dhammanata touched on this. And I must say that I feel that to some extent I've become more, my questioning faculty or my critical faculty has somehow become stronger. You know, it doesn't mean I just accept everything that Trivatra says, lock, stock and barrel, and I think that's important. If we feel we're doing that, then maybe we ought to question that. It's important that we keep a strong critical factory, that we ask questions. That doesn't mean giving up faith. It doesn't mean to say giving up our trust. That's important, but we still need to retain that. But what inspires me, really, is a vision. And that's what keeps me going, if you like. And it's a vision of the Sangha, that community, our community that we're part of. Of reaching out, and there's a wonderful image. For those who don't know, there's a Buddhist figure called Avalokiteshvara, and he is, if you like, the archetype or the most sort of the strongest image one can feel of compassion. That's what he represents, and he's often depicted as having a thousand arms reaching out into the world, reaching out to help relieve suffering in the world. And I like that image. And Subhuti, who's one of Trivatna's main teachers, uses this image, but apart from reaching out, he also talks about bringing in. So what we're doing, we're reaching out from somewhere at the centre of the movement. There's almost like a force, if you like, and we're coming out from there and reaching out, but at the same time, we're bringing in, and it's almost like a breathing. It's the arms reaching out, but bringing in. That's bringing in people from the outside to show them what we have. And so in communication and connection with others in the Sangha, I know I'm participating in what Subhuti calls a force field generated by a collective service of the Dharma, a force field generated by a collective service of Dharma. And the Sangha gives me a context for putting my particular strengths at the service of something greater than myself. And we all have strengths. You know, we may not realise that, but we all have strengths. It took me a while to realise what mine was. But we all do have things that we can contribute. And so, you know, as part of the Sangha, I feel I'm contributing to something, and I feel I'm contributing in some sort of way to the sum total of positive emotion in the world, which again, you know, is a big ask. But, you know, in whatever little way I can. I could say a lot about the Sangha, but I won't go what it means to be. But perhaps I can just say that at its best, it's an association of individuals, as Dharmanath has explained, helping each other to develop and become more and more of our own nature. And we are all very different in the Sangha. We need to look around. We're not all sort of faceless clones tripping out together on transcendental bliss. You know, we're not one's faceless or nothing. Although there is something to be said for transcendental bliss, I must say. And in some way in all this, for me, there's been an opening of the heart. And that's probably the most important thing that's happened in my spiritual life so far. Opening my heart to my own potential as a human being, to an inner direction and purpose in my life, and to interconnectedness with others. And for me, this inner direction and purpose is, as best I can, big or small ways, to help to communicate something that's changed my life in very positive ways, to help me to communicate the Dharma as best I can to others. And the Sangha is the context for that. And so to conclude, I know the Buddha didn't like talking about miracles much, but I do feel sort of miracles happen in my life. I do feel that because of different conditions that I've put myself in. And meditation has been important to me. Private study has been important to me. But what's been the most important is putting myself in a group of people, surrounded by people, in our Sangha, in the community. And going back to my diary, my agenda, my old agenda, my me agenda was very much like being blindly led along a dark, narrowing path of self-obsession on my own. A bit like this black diary here. It's superficial. On the outside, it's a bit shiny, but really it's dark. I'm going to try and put that behind me now, if I can. The trouble is, it keeps on popping out again, but I'll try and put it behind me if I can. And my new agenda, if you like, what I'm trying to have as my agenda is more like a we agenda. Yeah? Putting we at the heart of my life. And this is more like striding along purposely, striding along with others personally, along a bright, more expansive path, with a definite sense of direction on that path. And to some extent, it's more like this diary here, which is brightly coloured. And as it happens, this is my diary, this is my agenda for this year. So, thank you. Thank you for listening.